Hello and welcome. You are listening to podcast 3 for the lecture on local and stochastic search. We resume on slide 66 and we will look now into two more algorithms. We start first with genetic algorithms. So far, all search strategies have simply selected one specific node, a single state, and looked at the applicable actions, and then decided to follow one possible successor state. Genetic algorithms work quite differently. They are based on the idea to take two parent states and combine them into a new successor state. So the basic idea of these algorithms is based on evolution, because when we watch evolution, then it seems to produce good solutions. So similar to evolution, genetic algorithms simulate something similar to sexual reproduction. So they take two parents and recombine their genomes by applying the known genetic changes that happens through a reproduction. So we cross genomes, we mutate the single genes, and we also select certain parents. So to implement a genetic algorithm, we need to encode the state in the best way as a kind of string, because this makes all these operations easy to implement. We need to have a fitness function to evaluate an individuum and that represents a state or a solution, and then use this to select these individuals from our population. So we keep a number of states representing these genes in the pool of individuums. So again, I've selected a few a link to a YouTube video that explains these ideas. So slide 68 summarizes the main operations of a genetic algorithm. So we have a given a population of individuums. We select a few of them, and now we do a pairwise recombination. So we take their gene representation, we decide to cut at a specific position, and then we do a crossover. So we combine the first cut of one individuum with the second cut of another. Finally, we take these resulting crossovers and change certain specific genes. So you can see that these algorithms offer huge choice of variation possibilities. For example, how you select individuals, how you implement crossover, or where do you actually do some mutations. So let's look at an example on slide 69. So here we use genetic algorithms to solve the 8 queens problem. And we encode a position on the chessboard using a string representation. Each string contains a sequence of numbers that give us the position of a queen in a column. So you see, so we simply enumerate the columns. So we, like, the first column is on the first position in the string, the second column on the second position, and on each of these positions, the numbers show on which field the queen currently resides. As a fitness function, we can, for example, use the number of non-attacking pairs of queens. So here this would mean the higher the value, the better the configuration of the queens on the chessboard. A solution has, under this fitness function, the value of 28. Other fitness functions, for example, are also possible. So now we start with an initial population that usually in these algorithms we initialize randomly. So we construct, for example, 4 strings representing 4 individual solutions, and we simply distribute the numbers 1 to 8 over these strings. Each number should occur ideally only once, but you can see that here we even place, for example, in the second lowest individuum, we place three strings in the same row on the chessboard. So now we apply our fitness function and we count the number of non-attacking pairs. You can see that the solution or the two individuals on the top have quite high values. The third one has a value of 20 and the individuum on the bottom has a value of 11. So this determines also the probability by which these individuals will be chosen. Now our selection function kicks in, and here we assume that we take the highest. Now we take the like the two highest values individuums we take a little bit more often. So we pick the individuum with value 23 twice, and we recombine it with two individuals that have also a very high evaluation. So now you see the two recombinations. So now we do need to do a crossover. So we decide where we cut these two parents to form new children. So the first pair we cut after the third position, and the second pair we cut after the fifth position. We could also imagine other selection strategies with other cuts. Now we recombine the two strings that you can see in the crossover column. So this leads to new offsprings. In this case, we have four new individuals. And now we do a single mutation. So based on some strategy, we decide to change certain numbers in these new strings. After this, we will add these individuals to our population, apply the fitness function again, and also decide which of the individuals we want to keep in the population and have them survive for the next round. Slide 70 shows the crossover operation again. Cutting these strings is the same as if you cut through the two chessboards and then you glued the parts that you have together again. Slide 71 discusses the suitability of genetic algorithms for optimization. So when you think about the way how evolution works, you see that you get very well adapted individuals, but they are not equal. So there is a quite high variety in a population, which is very important to ensure that the population can survive when the environmental conditions change. So if evolution would optimize, then we would all be equal, but this would not increase our chance to survive under changing conditions. So you see genetic algorithms often used to solve optimization problems, but they are not optimizing. What they do is they find these variety of good solutions, well adapted, based on a fitness function. And for applications where you want to have a certain variety in solution candidates, this is a good idea. But using it to really create optimal solutions, you better use, for example, an algorithm such as UCT or heuristic search if your problem is not having a very large search space. Slide 72 shows another video. You see how a little figure is adapted by a genetic algorithm to learn to jump over a ball. So here the fitness function gives feedback to the construction of this little figure, and it begins to change its shape in a way that it can increase its jumping capabilities. So finally, I want to talk about a class of algorithms that do not have a single agent model, but that use a multi-agent model. you see this class of algorithms described on slide 73. They are called ant colony optimization. So the idea here is that we actually use something that we today call the wisdom of the crowd. So why not use several agents that search in parallel for the solution and combine their results? We also call this type of algorithm swarm intelligence. So ant-colony algorithms are based on observations of ant populations. When ants search for food, they travel in different directions and they deposit pheromone on the ground in order to mark favorable paths that other members of the ant colony should follow. So when we implement an ant colony optimization algorithm, we have to implement a number of artificial ants. Each of these ants builds a solution to an optimization problem, and we need to find a way how they can exchange information on the quality of their solutions via some communication scheme. And this is very often inspired by the deposit of pheromone that real ants use. Many of these algorithms are actually applied for traveling salesperson problems. So because also in a salesperson problem, we are looking for paths in some environment. So our ants are looking for good tours to visit a number of cities or to travel from a city A to a city B. So, for example, in the classical TSP problem, the ant must visit each city exactly one. A city that is far away has a chance of being chosen less frequently, so we look always for shorter paths between two cities. And then, when the ant has found a path, it deposits pheromone. And when other ants come on to a city, they will actually see these pheromone deposits and also then take tours or paths that have more pheromone and that actually represent shorter distances between cities. Furthermore, after the iterations of this algorithm, also trails of pheromone evaporate. So if no ant travels on a certain path, the pheromone will gradually disappear so that it becomes even more unlikely that a path is visited. So the advantage of such an approach is, for example, that when the network layout changes dynamically, then this algorithm can very nicely adapt to the changing layout. Slide 75 summarizes pseudocode of such an algorithm, and I also give you one of the pioneering papers of this idea at the bottom. So with this, I want to end the lecture. Slide 76 gives the summary. So what have we learned today? We've seen that in very large search spaces, heuristic search will fail because it cannot really make informed choices on successor states anymore. Very large search spaces exhibit plateau regions, for example, where the heuristic evaluation of all nodes is the same. So we would wander around on such plateaus for an infinite time. So that's why research has developed local and stochastic search methods. And we also now focus more on anytime algorithms. This means our algorithms have given a certain budget. Ideally, they find solutions very, very quickly, so even under very short budgets. But the more time they have, the more they can improve the solution quality. So given infinite time, very often we can show that these algorithms can actually converge to the optimal solution. We've looked into detail into the UCT algorithm, which is one of the most popular stochastic search algorithms and which has been really led to a big breakthrough in game playing solutions developed by AI. We also looked at a very basic local search algorithms such as hill climbing, for example. And this algorithm also can be used successfully in applications when we combine it with random restarts and also random walks and moves. Another technique that we looked at is random restarts. So we run our algorithm for a while, but then we simply start over completely from scratch, but at a different part of the search space. So hill climbing does this in a more arbitrary way, but we've also seen that UCT actually does this in a very clever way. So it is so successful because it finds this good balance between exploration and exploitation using the UCB1 values to make informed selections of nodes. At the end of this lecture, we looked at meta-heuristic methods, such as, for example, genetic algorithms, but they do not guarantee optimality, even under infinite resources. As this is important to remember that we cannot use them really to solve optimization problems, also you will see this in practice attempted very often, but they are actually good for finding a variety of well-fitting solutions. Slide 77 also gives you some working questions. Again, to repeat the material in this lecture and also look for answers to these questions when you read the book. So when working on the material for this lecture, you should be able to explain how local and systematic search methods differ. You should also be able to say a few words about the theoretical properties of local search methods. In particular, we discussed previously properties such as completeness, correctness, and complexity and optimality. Here in this slide deck, we do not have explicit slide summaries summarizing these properties, but it has always been mentioned throughout the lecture. Furthermore, you should be able to explain techniques that have been developed to escape from local minima and plateaus. Also, we want to discuss how local search why a local search often works well in practice, where, for example, heuristic and systematic search methods fail. You should be able to explain how hill climbing works, and you should have a basic understanding of the main phases and the computations of the N and Q values of the UCT algorithm. With this, I want to end this lecture.